This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Now, Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome. The Ontario legislature will finally be going back to work after a five-month break. It's no secret. The reason for that was a bid to stay out of the headlines during the federal election campaign, though that did not stop Justin Trudeau from constantly invoking Premier Doug Ford and his government as the main target. Now, judging by the results of Monday's vote, at least here in the GTA, that strategy worked. So what are the Ford government's priorities coming up, and how do they intend to win back some voters who gave them a huge majority but may have soured after some early missteps? Want to hear from you, 416-360-0740, toll-free 1-866-740-4740. And now I'm joined by Paul Calandra, Conservative MPP for Markham Stouffville and the Government House Leader. Welcome and thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Libby. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Okay, so your government seemed to be the main bogeyman during the election campaign, the federal election campaign. How does that inform your priorities for the coming session?
We obviously knew that the federal campaign was going to be a very passionately fought campaign. I think we expected that, and it was part of the reason why we made the decision to do as much as we possibly could to stay out of that. The premier had said to us, "Look, we're probably facing a minority parliament. We're going to have to be able to work with not only one but all of the parties if it is a minority." And in retrospect, he's now proven correct. We're just going to move forward. Obviously, we have an agenda that continues us on the path of creating jobs and opportunity for the people of Ontario. We have some really big projects, some exciting stuff coming forward, obviously, with respect to transit and transportation in the GTA. So I'm actually looking forward to it. I think we have a good, not only a fall session ahead of us, but the winter and spring session are going to be equally as busy.
Did that fact inform your priorities at all? I mean, after all, if you're looking certainly at the GTA, it's a sea of liberal red. And did you think maybe there are some things and some ways where you should be changing course a little bit?
No, I was, Libby, as you probably know, I was a federal member of parliament for a while under the Stephen Harper government, and my I always faced a liberal government here in the province of Ontario. It's more about working together and finding ways to work together. We have an agenda that we want to bring forward, and the issues are so different federally and provincially. And we appreciate, the people of Ontario made a decision on those federal issues that were important to them. But for our part, it doesn't change what we want to do. We want to continue to focus on jobs and economic growth and on the Premier's signature policies with respect to transit and transportation, not only in the GTA, but roads and infrastructure in other parts of the province, so that we can continue to keep the economy moving and continue the good, steady progress that we've seen in job creation. But look, I'll say this. We absolutely positively are committed to working with the federal government, with this minority parliament, to help them make it work, because we truly understand that the only way you build a prosperous Ontario is through a prosperous Canada. So we're going to do that for the people of Ontario, and looking forward to what we can accomplish.
Now, the first thing that seems to have come up in a big way, though, is the carbon tax and the fight of some of the Conservative provincial premiers against the carbon tax. So we have a Blaine Higgs saying he's going to give that up because he took a message from the voters. You the province has already lost once in court, but seems to be committed to spending another $30 million on that. And the opposition is already screaming, not surprisingly, saying, "Well, gee, that's not a good way to establish a good working relationship."
So I think the federal government has always known that. Or the Trudeau government has always known that this is something that we were very, very passionate about. Look, the people of Ontario pay a hefty price for the progress that we have made towards meeting our Paris Accord targets. And we pay that price through the Fair Hydro Plan. We pay that price through investments that we make in our nuclear fleet and in terms of our green energy projects. But we've made that decision here in the province of Ontario for many, many years, starting with Mike Harris through Dalton McGuinty and Kathleen Wynne and Ernie Eves. We've made that commitment to a cleaner environment. We're going to continue to make that commitment and meet our targets without a carbon tax. And with so many other things that are now facing us in terms of challenges, potential challenges to our economy, adding something else to it is just not something that we believe in. So we are going to take the next step. We want to get the interpretation of the court, but it doesn't in any way lessen our commitment to meeting those targets because we understand how important it is. But look, when you know we pay $4 billion a year, Libby, on Fair Hydro, and that is to subsidize the green energy policies of the previous government. Now, I don't want to be critical of that because that's helping us meet our targets. But we do pay already a significant price to meet those targets, and we just don't think a carbon tax on top of the price we're already paying each and every year for the next 25 years is fair to the people of Ontario.
Speaking of hydro bills, so during the election campaign, you promised to cut hydro bills by an average of $173, but instead there's going to be a small increase. It looks like $24 a year. Still, there's a discrepancy to that.
Yeah, there's still a lot of work to be done on that. I think we completed some consultations before I was moved over to the Government House Leaders portfolio. We completed a number of industrial consultations with industrial ratepayers across the province. We have to make sure that we maintain affordable electricity in that sector because that's what helps drive the economy and build jobs. But we also did say, of course, we want to bring down hydro bills. It's still, it is still very expensive, even with the progress that that we've made on eliminating some of the more expensive contracts. We have made that commitment. We will meet that goal. The minister is continuing to consult and to find ways of doing it. It'll take a lot of work, given the fact that there are a lot of contracts that are already in place. But you're right, that is a priority of ours going forward, and we have, as I said, another 2.5 years to get there, and that will form part of what is going to be a very busy
So was that
year.
A stretch goal?
No, it can't be, Libby. It really can't be. I still hear it when I'm out and about from homeowners. They still say, look, it's something that you have to deal with. I hear from small, medium, and large job creators. It's something that we have to deal with. When our ministers travel to other jurisdictions to try and bring jobs to Ontario, we hear about it. Part of it is we've made a decision to that cost us in terms of meeting our climate change agreements, but the people of Ontario accept that. But part of it is poor decisions that governments have made. So we have to do it. We will do it. We're finding ways of doing it that won't then impact our fiscal situation, or that doesn't leave a lasting legacy of debt on the ratepayers and on taxpayers.
Now, when it comes to whichever sector or legislation, the opposition keeps saying we're fighting the Ford government's cuts, and the Ford government keeps saying actually we're spending more money than the last government. It's not a cut, might not be an increase to the rate of inflation. So how are you going to square that circle? I mean, in terms of education, we've heard those arguments on both sides. You just announced yesterday some plans for efficiencies in the way government is run, bulk ordering and all of that. Are there going to be job cuts related to that as well?
Look, no, the premier was clear on that. But look, there are certain sectors of the economy in certain areas where the government supports that we are going to have to make additional investments. Education was one of them. Long-term care is another one. We simply can't meet the goals of building 15,000 new long-term care beds without borrowing money to make those investments. The increased investments in education, we've said all along that we were going to have to make some additional investments. Healthcare is another avenue where we're going to have to make those investments. But that's why we're balancing the budget. I know a lot of people have said, you know, could you have balanced the budget earlier? Yeah, we probably could have. But we wanted to balance how we did that in terms of growing the economy. And we've seen job creation going in, really doing very, very well. And starting to tackle waste and duplication within government with our partners at the municipal level and with school boards. So we've been working with them. So we will meet those targets. Some areas, will there be reductions in government expenditures? Absolutely. But in priority areas, as we campaign on, whether it's health, long-term care, and education, look, the reality is we just have to make investments in those areas if we're going to continue to meet the real, whether it's healthcare needs of Ontarians. And the other avenue, of course, too, is really the groundbreaking transit and transportation proposals that the premier has brought forward, and which, thankfully, all of the parties in the minority parliament, I guess with the exception of the Bloc, agreed to supporting. So there's a lot of good things happening. We'll meet our targets. We're going to do it over 5 years. We'll do it in a reasonable way. But I think most Ontarians understand that we have to, at some point in time, start living within our means. But they want us to do it in a reasonable fashion that protects the things that are most important to them.
You know, interesting. Speaking of healthcare, I was just talking to the folks at CARP.
Yep.
And CARP's members are very frustrated. And even though people understand, for instance, that it takes a while to get a long-term care bed on stream, the big question is, why is all of this taking so long? The other week, I was talking to Health Minister Christine Elliott, and she's telling me about investments in home care. And then the next day, I hear about cutbacks, about, you know, people who are released very quickly after surgery, but then can't get home care.
Yeah, this is part of a transformation that is happening right now in the healthcare system. It's the move to, as I'm sure Minister Elliott talked to you about, it's the move to the Ontario Health Team so that we can have a blanket of care for individuals. One of the things that we heard a lot.
But it's not happening.
No, well, I mean, look, it's not going to happen overnight, 100%. We've been here for a year. The minister has made tremendous progress on this, whether it's on long-term care beds. You know, we've announced, I think, already a little over 8,000 long-term care beds, which are being built and added to the system, but that takes time to build them. But I think equally important, if not more importantly, is the move to the Ontario Health Teams. There are a number of them which have are proceeding right now as we speak. But you're not wrong, because we do hear this a lot. And look, I went through it myself, you know, with a father-in-law who, you know, broke his shoulder in Ajax, but came to live with me in Stouffville. And the trying to maneuver yourself around the system from home care from Etobicoke, or excuse me, Ajax, and transferring it up to Stouffville was very, very difficult and challenging. And it's just, but the care that he got once we navigated around it was second to none. They worked so hard. But what we have to do is make it easier for people to access and make it more available for people, because, you know, we can't have it both ways. We want people to be in their homes longer. And if we're going to do that, we have to have the resources in place so that whether it's nurses or PSWs, that they're there to take care of people when they need it. And I think once we move towards the Ontario Health Teams, we will be better placed to do that. But we have to do it in such a way that allows us to phase it in so that nobody is losing the services that they're already getting. It is a challenge, though, Libby.
Let me tell you exactly what it was, yeah. And I'm working on columns on this. So
sure.
This is a friend of mine and her mother in a different town in St. Catharines. Fairly big surgery, double mastectomy, released, and great care in the hospital, released overnight, but then told, there used to be a nurse that visits the first time because there are drains to be drained and all kinds of stuff. Sorry, there were cutbacks. That's not available. You have to go to the nurse less than 48 hours after this major surgery. And the same thing, her mother, who is nearly 90 years old, has these weeping wounds and actually is not mobile at all and told, sorry, no, nobody can come to your home to deal with that. You better get there.
Yeah, and that is exactly what the minister is working on with respect to these Ontario health teams. What we want to do is get to a system where, look, if you, from your doctor to if you're going in for a surgery, it's one person. And you know that when you have left the hospital, when you're discharged, you don't have to make a call to get home care. You know who the home care nurse is, when they're coming, the type of care that they needed. Your doctor has access to those files. And everything is kind of done for you as in a blanket of care, because you're 100% right.
Well, exactly. But
that experience just is not.
There was a person. Sorry,
we shouldn't be there, right? That's not what we should be doing.
There was a person who came to see her in the hospital to say, "Sorry, this has been cut back."
Look, I don't want to get into someone's specific case, but overall, this is what we are trying to accomplish. I've heard. In a lot of instances, people who can't make it into the doctor's office to hear results of tests, can they do it online? So we're trying to do things like that. Just make the system work better for people and make it less cumbersome to navigate around the system. Look, I was a former member of Parliament. I thought it would be easy to navigate, but my gosh, I found it very challenging to try and find home care services for my father-in-law, and I thought, you know, that's not the way it should be. But, and I think it's government that has put these types of processes in place that don't work for people who actually need the services, and that's what we're trying to eliminate. It's not the quality of care. Right? I can't tell you how impressed I was when the people came. It was second to none. We're hearing that the same thing in long-term care. The quality of care is great. Perhaps there needs to be more assistance. But that's what we have to figure out as a government, getting out of the way, making it easier for people to access the system, and making sure that the money that people are investing in healthcare actually works for them. So I'm actually really charged up about the Ontario health teams. These will be a model by which other provinces will transition to, and I'm quite excited. I know what I mean, a big benefit to communities like mine, where there is a growing seniors population, where many more are wanting to stay at home. They want to stay either on their own or with family members, but that's the one stumbling block, ease and access to care. So we do understand how important that is.
Well, I hope you're right.
I hope your friend is doing well. She
there's up and down, you know, it's emotional as well as the physical. Before I let you go, what is the first piece of legislation you're going to bring forward next week?
Well, I don't have it yet, but I can tell you the general thing is going to be we have a fall economic statement that we have to bring. We have new animal welfare legislation that will be coming up in the first week as well. We have a Treasury Board bill which was put on the notice paper back in June. So those are the three, and then of course we have a piece of mental health legislation that Minister Elliott has on the order paper too. So that's what our first couple weeks will be focused on.
Okay, Paul Calandra, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for taking the time, Libby. I appreciate it.
Okay, bye bye. All right. Right now, I am going to bring in MPP Sarah Singh, who is the deputy leader of the NDP, the opposition, of course. Sarah Singh, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Libby.
Okay, so I don't know if you were listening to the House leader. He's laid out his priorities, all of those things that we are worried about. He said, well, work in progress. What's your take on that?
Well, you know, I caught the sort of tail end of things from Mr. Calandra, and I think, you know, the conversation around home care and long-term care is an important one. You know, I'm really sorry to hear that he was having challenges in finding services for his father-in-law, and I'm really sorry to hear about the situation you shared as well, Libby. But these stories aren't uncommon. These are the stories we hear every single day about Ontarians trying to access healthcare services here in the province, whether that's an aging person or whether that's somebody here in Brampton waiting at our hospital. The services are simply not there when people need them. And I don't know, with no disrespect to our new House leader, but I don't know if the cuts to healthcare are going to help us solve the problem. He spoke a lot about modernizing the services and making things more accessible. Well, in order to do that, I think we need to be investing in the healthcare system, cutting those services.
Well, he was talking about investing, and they actually are spending more money, perhaps not as much more as many people would like, but they are spending more money than was spent in the last government.
But I think, Libby, when we look at, sort of the inflation rate in healthcare and what this government is actually investing, I think it really does amount to cuts at the end of the day for services. Again, if there aren't going to be nurses or PSWs to deploy when we need them, that isn't going to help make the system more equitable or more accessible for folks when they're in need, frankly. So I understand that the government is using the rhetoric of investment, but in real dollars and real terms, those are cuts to those services.
Mm-hmm. And he was talking about how excited he is about those new Ontario health teams. What's your take on that?
Well, I think we all can acknowledge that there's a need to create better integration in the healthcare system. We're hopeful that that is the path that we're headed towards. I think there's a lot of concern around the process. I think for a number of people, they're concerned that perhaps this may lead to greater privatization in healthcare services. I mean, when we talk about home care, this is now a private service that folks are not able to access. There's those types of concerns. I think that, again, we're hopeful and optimistic that there will be better integration in the system. But I think that, again, we need to ensure that the right people are at the table, community is at the table to share what they need, and that people are being consulted with, frankly, with what they'd like to see changed in their healthcare system.
Mm-hmm. Hang on a second. I want to take a call from Helen in Toronto. Hi, Helen.
Hi, Libby. You were talking about somebody who had a double mastectomy and was kept overnight in the hospital and then didn't have many services after. My friend in Lindsay had a double mastectomy. It was a drive-through. She came in the morning. They sent her home in the afternoon. They didn't ask whether she had any help at home or had applied for any help. She had two dogs. We're just very lucky that we have a mutual friend in Lindsay who took her in.
Wow, because in my friend's case, they did. I mean, they sent somebody from CCAC who basically said, tough luck, there have been cuts, you're not going to get a nurse at home.
She didn't get that either. Eventually, somebody came in to wash her hair.
That's home care. But yeah, this is a big problem.
They don't even ask.
Yeah, well, and they should have. I mean, that I'm not sure that that's the result of some government cutback, because they are supposed to.
Well, this is several years ago. Thank God she's been cancer free for over 5 years.
Then it happened under the last government, and they should have asked. That's their brief.
I mean, something like that. You can walk in the front door and drop dead. Nobody's going to know.
Well,
except the dog.
I don't even know what to say to that. But Helen, thanks for sharing.
Okay, take care.
Okay,
bye.
Yeah, I mean, and Sarah, in terms of having those services for, one of the things that really makes me wonder. So this lack of having a nurse come to deal with something early on is one thing for my friend, but the same thing happened to her mother. Mm-hmm. Her mother is not mobile, is nearly 90 years old, and luckily had someone who could take her. But I'm thinking, with all this gridlock and backlog of alternative level of care, that, there are probably a lot of older people, and if they don't have someone who can take them to the nurse instead of having the nurse come to their home, they might just be staying in the hospital.
No, absolutely. I want to pick up on a point. Thank you so much to Helen for calling in. I think that we need to acknowledge that these problems are not new problems. You're absolutely right to say that this isn't just the result of what the Conservative government has done. These problems were created under the previous Liberal administration as well. And so what we're seeing now is this sort of crisis compounding. You know, when we talk about, you know, the need to have services and alternative levels of care available to folks, you know, cuts have been happening over the course of a number of years to the healthcare sector, and this is what the result of that looks like. You know, when we think about, you know, the aging population, as you've discussed, Libby, you know, and this is kind of that booming demographic right now that's facing sort of that crisis in terms of accessing the right support. You know, they need to make sure that there is an ability to age in our home, age in our communities. You know, making sure that there are nurses and PSWs that are able to be deployed, but also making sure that we're protecting those workers that are going out there. I think, you know, when we look at a PSW earning $14 an hour, you know, it really isn't feasible for them, you know, and they are also worn out. So how do we create, again, a system that's going to serve, you know, the patient, but also protect those workers?
Well, there's a reason why there's a shortage of them, because they are poorly paid and they have difficult working conditions.
Very difficult working conditions, and there's no protections in place for them. You know, if they're injured at work, we hear from a number of those, you know, support workers who are trying to, you know, address the real problem in our communities. But because of the working conditions that they face, the unsafe environments in some instances, you know, it's a very difficult profession for them to be in. A rewarding one, obviously, for many, but for so many others, you know, I think this is why legislation is needed to mandate, you know, the levels of care that we're providing, how it's supposed to be provided, that not only ensure, again, that the patient is receiving the right levels of care, but that those workers are protected and that they're able to do their jobs in a way that keeps them healthy and able to provide that care in a long-term and sustainable way as well.
So what are your priorities as the opposition as you head into a new session tomorrow?
So I think for us, you know, the priorities are fighting for those things that Ontarians across this province have been asking for. You know, healthcare services is obviously top of mind for everyone. I know that the House Leader mentioned that there's the potential mental health legislation that they'll be bringing forward. So looking forward to seeing what that is. But again, making sure that it's going to address some of the root causes that we have in our communities. So healthcare is top of mind. I think for us, you know, the autism file is still one that is a huge priority. I think we've had families for the last 5 months while Doug Ford's been, you know, not sure where, but wherever the premier has been, you know, these families have still been waiting while the legislature was in pause. So looking forward to getting back and trying to figure out what is going on with that file, what are the priorities of the government, and when can those families start to expect to see their services and dollars flow. I think another big priority for us is the education file across the board. You know, as I'm sure we're well aware, there have been significant cuts to education, with over 10,000 teachers losing their jobs over the next 4 years. So I think, you know, fighting for public education, ensuring that those jobs are protected, that students are getting the quality of education that they deserve, both at the elementary...
My understanding is that a lot of that is attrition.
And I don't know if that's necessarily true, but again, I think at the end of the day, you know, the financial accountability officer of the legislature, this is an independent officer that is stating that this many jobs will be lost. So these aren't, you know, our numbers from the NDP or the Conservatives' numbers. These are from the financial accountability office. But I think irrespective of whether, you know, five teachers are losing their jobs or 10, there's an impact. There has been an impact to education here in the province. You know, we hear from students time and time again that they're crammed into classrooms, many high school students forced to take spares because the electives that they need or required courses that they need are not available. So, you know, those are questions that we need to be asking of this government. I don't understand how we're going to modernize the education system, ensure that students have a world-class education if we're cutting courses and cutting teachers from the classroom. That just doesn't make any sense. So that's definitely a major priority for us as we head back into the legislature. And there are obviously a number of other issues that have been sort of brewing, but I think we're excited to get back to work at the end of the day and fight for, you know, the things that matter here in Ontario.
Okay, and we're all looking forward to seeing you all get back to work. Sarah Singh, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Libby. I really appreciate the opportunity. Have a great day.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.